Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Elizabeth Greenwood's new book is titled Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud. And she joins me this morning. Elizabeth, where are you? Are you in New York City?
I am in New York City.
Hey, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Big shout out to the Twin Cities, one of my favorite places on earth.
Oh, really? You've been here a few times.
Love it.
This is not where you would come if you faked your own death, right?
You know, I might. I have just been enthralled with Minneapolis since I first visited. But I will say I've only been there in spring and summertime.
Yeah.
So I might have to snowbird it out.
I was going to say. Yeah. I think we should be clear that this was not some silly gimmick of yours to write a book. I mean, you actually gave some pretty serious consideration to faking your own death.
Yeah, I did give some serious consideration to it. Like many Americans, I have just a ton of student loan debt. And when I started thinking about this topic about 6 years ago, that was informing decisions of mine, large and small, thinking about how I would use my tax refund if I got it. Was I going to pay back bill collectors, or was I going to, go live my life, go backpack somewhere, for example. So that's really how I started getting into the subject. Once I started, poking around a bit more seriously and actually meeting people who themselves had faked their deaths and the family members they left behind, it became clear that, student loan debt isn't exactly the best motivation or biggest. When people fake their deaths, the stakes are usually very high. So garden variety, six-figure student loan debt really didn't seem like that big a deal anymore.
The thing that surprised me about the idea at the center of faking your own death is that people don't think of this as kind of the conclusion to a failed period of my life. In some ways, I've failed if I have to do this. They think of it, I think, in the way that you put it, as a renaissance. I mean, you say faking death could be a refusal, a way to reject dreary facts, a way to bridge the chasm between who you are and who you want to be. I mean, this is a whole, people embrace the idea of this as really a whole new chapter of their life, a way to start over. That's not how I was thinking about it before I read the book.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that really struck a chord with me when I sat down with people who had themselves faked their deaths was that they did consider it to be a renaissance, but that it was going to be a temporary renaissance. When you get the idea in the first place to fake your death, typically you're in some kind of trouble, either legal or financial. And a lot of the people I spoke with had this idea that they would be able to fake their deaths, wait out a statute of limitations for the courts, for example. But by the way, just for your listeners out there, when you defraud the courts, there is no statute of limitations. So kind of a bad idea. But their whole scheme was that they would later reintegrate into their lives, so that faking their deaths would actually be this kind of intermediary period while they waited for some craziness to die down. And as you can imagine, that usually doesn't work out so well.
I think you've alluded to that. There is nothing illegal in making it look like you're dead as long as you don't file any false paperwork on it. Is that right?
That's exactly right. There's no law called faking your death. Unfortunately, a lot of the ancillary crimes one would commit are very much illegal. So, for example, if you are skipping out on bail or a prison sentence, then that is illegal. You can get an obstruction of justice charge heaped onto your sentence. If you attempt to take out another identity, use a different social security number, then that's identity theft. That's very illegal. When you try to claim a life insurance policy, that's insurance fraud. So there is this very narrow stretch of territory you can occupy where you fake your death and you pretty much live off the grid and you don't try to assume a different identity, where ostensibly you are not breaking any laws.
I can't imagine, though, how you don't have to take on some form of a new identity. I don't care how far off the grid you are. you know, somewhere, what are you leaving with a ton of cash? I mean, somewhere you have to be able to access money to live. You have to have electricity, you know, those kinds of things where you have to present yourself as someone else.
That's right. There are two really great cases that I came across for the book that, you know, it kind of defies the limits of our imagination, where people did, in fact, live without assuming official government identity, at least, for decades. So one of those is a case of a man called Benny Wint, who in the 80s was suspected on drug trafficking charges. He staged a drowning off Daytona Beach, and he had stuffed several thousand dollars into his swim trunks. He made it about half a mile down shore, got out, dried off. He hitched a ride with a trucker, and he made a new life for himself in Ozark, Alabama, under the name Bill Sweet. He sold NASCAR paraphernalia online, where he was able to subsidize his lifestyle. And just a few years back, he was pulled over for a broken taillight.
Wow.
Police asked him to show his driver's license. He said, "I can't. I'm sorry." He was booked under John Doe. And then, you know, within a few hours, he came clean and said, "Remember that drowning in Florida 20 years ago?" There's a similar case out of Germany by a woman called Petra Patsitska, who in the early 80s, she was a young computer science student outside Dusseldorf. She was last seen boarding a bus when she apparently, you know, going to her regular classes at the university. She was 19 years old. She was never seen again. A few years later, her parents reached out to a Crime Stoppers show to help with this cold case, to help in locating Petra. There had been a spate of murders in her town of teenage girls fitting her profile somewhat. And the person who was identified as the culprit in those murders admitted to murdering Petra, admitted to her demise. So they thought that that crime had been put to bed. In September 2015, police outside Frankfurt responded to a routine complaint of an intruder. They came in, they asked this woman, you know, now quite a bit older, for ID. She said, I'm Mrs. Schroeder, I believe it was. I don't have ID. I can't show you. And again, they remember that woman who was murdered back in the 80s? So she had been living just doing household work, getting paid in cash, never took out another government ID. Her only penalty when all of this came to light was that she had to register herself alive with the German authorities.
So, Elizabeth, so you know that I'm asking listeners for, you know, you're gonna recreate your life. Where would you go? What would you do? And I'd love to hear from you on this. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You're going to vanish. Going to start a new life over, what would you do? Michael says on Twitter, working on a fishing boat out of Booth Bay Harbor. Chester says, Eastern Europe, system is so disorganized and cheap, I could still travel. You know, do people think of this is the chance for me, you know, Petra and the other guy that you just mentioned, this is the chance for me to have the life I've always wanted to have? Or are they so constrained by what we've talked about that you're not really living this great new life?
You know, it's a really good question, and it's one that I asked throughout the book. And when I did interview psychologists and psychiatrists about their thoughts on this, you know, I think very universal fantasy of recreation, of leaving ourselves behind, the thing they said they hear very often is that they'll have clients come into their office and say, you know, if I just moved across the country to Los Angeles, I could begin again and I'd be different. And it's kind of going under this assumption that if we were to relocate, then there we would be a different, superior version of ourselves. Faking your death is that idea kind of extrapolated out to its greatest expression. The thing is, we can never really leave ourselves behind. We think
exactly.
That if we had this second chance, we would just be radically different. But we really are who we are. And the ways in which people get caught when they attempt a crime like this of disappearing and leaving behind whatever it is the fact that they can't sever ties with who they were. They can't cut ties with their families and loved ones. And they keep reaching out. They keep recreating the same habits and patterns. So I think that while it is so attractive to just fantasize of this fabulous other person we would be in our second lives, you know, who we are is very deeply imprinted onto us.
Well said. Here's somebody who tweets as Lucky Bamboo, who says, just what you've just said, Elizabeth, you can fake your own death, but you can never outrun yourself. Talk to me about, is it Frank Ahern? Ahern? How do you pronounce his name?
Frank Ahern.
The disappearance concierge, as you call him. Tell me what he does.
So Frank Ahern works as a quote-unquote privacy consultant, which means that he assists his clients in deleting themselves both physically and digitally. And he charges a very steep price tag for this service because, in his words, disappearing is such an immense pain in the butt. There are so many things that you have to think about and consider. And most of us, you know, have these giant blind spots when it comes to ourselves, especially. So he takes some of the grunt work out of that.
I mean, one of the things that he tells you is technology, and this is kind of counterintuitive, that technology actually makes it easier to disappear these days, not harder. I found that, you know, kind of astonishing given how easy it is to leave an electronic trail when we're not even realizing we're doing that. How can that be?
So what Frank is referring to there is about how you would set yourself up in your next life. Frank has been in this business he started out as a skip tracer in the 80s, which is an unlicensed PI, which they don't fiddle with things like warrants and laws, for example. So he knew how to find people and follow all of their trails. So then he kind of inversed his wisdom to help people disappear. And what he said with regard to that is that, you know, back before the internet, if you wanted to relocate to Belize, for example, you would have to get on the phone with a travel agent and you would have to get the timetable of all the flights leaving from your city that week. And you would, you know, maybe have to send a personal check to the airline. You would have to send away for a realtor's catalog of homes to rent. And it would just be this, you know, weeks long, months long process. Whereas now, you know, you can log on from the library, say, to Airbnb and Kayak and book all of that just, you know, in 20 minutes. So he's referring to kind of the ease with which, you know, our digital age has accommodated us in this way. But you're absolutely right. The kind of trails and footprints you can leave behind these days really does make disappearing seem impossible.
Yeah,
and that's one of the reasons why I was so just that much more enthralled with pursuing the subject.
I mean, think about this, Elizabeth. You would have to, and this will get us to your sojourn to the Philippines, but you have to travel under your real identity. It's almost impossible to get on a plane and fly somewhere if you're not using your real identity. Now, you can fake your death once you get to that place, but you can't just vanish from the United States if you're going to take a plane, can you?
No, you can't. And that is why some of the life insurance fraud investigators I spoke to pointed out that death fraud claims that they investigate that happen multinationally. So, for example, you have you're a citizen of the United States. Your life insurance policy is from the United States. You travel abroad to anywhere, say France, and you fake your death there. It just becomes that you always will have that trace of where you departed and where you arrived. But the fact is, most law enforcement does not operate very well multinationally. Mm. So it's not that people wouldn't know exactly where you came in and out of. It's just making it more difficult to be pursued.
So if you were going to try to claim a life insurance policy, which people do because there's a lot of money at stake, someone like Steve Rambam. How do you pronounce
Rambam? Rambam. Yeah. He answers to both. Yeah.
So someone like that is probably going to be on your trail if you've tried to fake your own death. You want to collect an insurance policy. The insurance companies are not just going to pay out. They're going to put an investigator on this, like him.
Indeed. And they will put investigators like Steve, who is a world-renowned missing persons expert and private investigator. Steve is charging that company from $1,500 to $2,000 a day for his services. So the cases that get looked at very hard are cases that are very expensive. So if you're trying to claim a policy in the millions, it will get looked at with that level of scrutiny. If you don't get too greedy, though, and you take out a policy that is commensurate with your net worth, that's also another big red flag, is people who, you know, are, say, work in retail and then take out these massive claims. And then all of a sudden, you know, 6 months later, they say that they've drowned somewhere. Those get looked at very with a lot of eyeballs.
So do most people do kind of what you did in the Philippines, you know, set up kind of the way they're going to vanish, let's say in the United States, and have all these contacts that they're going to go to once they get to some, you know, foreign country where they think it is going to be easier to disappear? And then my question is it really, if you're trying to do this somewhere else?
Well, I think that it is easier typically to do this crime somewhere else, because in a lot of countries that the life insurance fraud investigators are flown to look at these cases, countries like India, China, the Philippines, Nigeria, and those are Mexico. Those are just a few. These are countries that typically already have a pretty robust economy of fraud. You know, whether it's counterfeit documents or people whose palms are willing to be greased to write you some official government documents. And a lot of death fraud cases take place with documents rather than going to the lengths of having to procure a corpse, which people do sometimes do. So I think that committing the crime overseas is typically the way to go, though I do not encourage it, of course, for the record.
necessary disclaimer
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, I think having as many local people and contacts on the ground already cultivated that you can trust. But the problem is you never know how trustworthy these people are until, you know, you're really all those irons are in the fire. And what's happened in a lot of the cases Steve has investigated is that these local contacts will absolutely sell you out, you know, with very little second thought. So it's the tricky part about death fraud is there really is no dress rehearsal for it. You kind of just got to set it up and hope for the best.
Linda hears it. This is funny. She says if she was going to fake her own death, she'd move to Minnesota, change her name to Mark Anderson or Dave Johnson. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Or maybe Sarah Jane Olson. Do you know what she's referring to, Elizabeth? You might not.
I wish I did, but I do not.
It's somebody, Kathleen Salaya, who was part of the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Okay.
She participated in a crime that she ultimately served time for, but she disappeared and turned up here in St. Paul.
Wow.
And lived for many, many years as the wife of an emergency room doctor. She had children. She was caught when America's Most Wanted did an episode on her. And people turned around and said,
incredible.
I think she lives next door to me. I think that's Kathleen Salaya posing as Sarah Jane Olson.
That's just amazing. And it's a great piece of wisdom, is that sometimes hiding in plain sight is the best method.
So when you got to the Philippines, you undertook the challenge of getting what looked like a very official death certificate. What did that include? What'd you have to do to get it? Describe that for people who haven't read the book.
So I wanted to see how far I could get in this world of death fraud. So I arrived in the Philippines and I was set up with two amazing local fixers on the ground, guys named Snooky and Bong. And Snooki and Bob
fascinating
and
characters, I have to say.
They're fantastic. So they helped me procure my own death certificate along with the embassy paperwork and official police statement and witness testimony for a fatal car crash that took place in July of 2013. And, you know, I guess I had envisioned what this would be like as a lot of kind of trolling the docks and talking to men in trench coats and slipping people money. But that was not what it was at all. We spent the day waiting in a hotel lobby in Makati City, which is the business center in Manila, just waiting for a mole they have in one of the government agencies to procure these documents. He's a guy that will siphon off different government papers for, you know, whoever needs it. He said his most common requests are diplomas and driver's licenses, and that death certificates are actually he doesn't get that request every day. So it was just a lot of waiting more than anything.
Yeah, but in the end, you got a certificate that looked, when you took it back to New York and you showed it to one of your investigator contacts, it sounds like he was kind of impressed with what you had.
He was impressed, and that made me feel so great because for years he had just been so puzzled as to why I wanted to do this in the first place. He sees the ugly side of this all the time, so just the fact that a lay person such as myself was still interested always kind of boggled his mind. He did think that it was pretty up to snuff. And the thing is, and this is one of the biggest gaps in the system, is depending on where you file the paperwork, there will be different levels of scrutiny. So if you are filing, you know, for example, a death certificate from Manila in New York City, where they might see many more of those, just given the diverse population here, and, you know, perhaps better technologies for looking at this certificate, it might get a lot more analysis, a lot more scrutiny. If you're filing these documents in, you know, rural counties where perhaps they're not seeing this every day, you can maybe roll the dice and take your chances.
You might get away with
this. It'll go through. You just may.
Call for you, Elizabeth, here from Colleen in Minneapolis. Hi, Colleen. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah, I was curious. All of the death investigation she's doing is for people who are doing this illegally and scamming. And so I wonder how that compares to when the government does it for, say, witness protection and does it legally. And, you know, on all the shows, they say, we can make you disappear. Hmm. And I just wondered if there's any difference other than it's easier in their resources.
It's a really good question. I had a question about it, too, in my notes. What's the answer to that, Elizabeth?
So typically when a person is entering WITSEC, which is the government's witness protection program, they will not stage a death accident. So because typically if this is a witness who's testifying in a very high profile crime and then, oops, you know, they had a fishing boat accident, no one's going to believe it anyway. So they don't really fake people's deaths, but they do help them just vaporize, vanish, and set them up in different parts of the country with replete with all the documents they would need, high school diplomas, new birth certificates, driver's licenses, all those things. So, you know, since that is under the umbrella of the government, that is indeed legal. The big difference there is that they just won't bother with orchestrating a narrative of why this person died.
Jeffrey feels your pain on the student loan debt, Elizabeth.
Oh,
he
yes,
says
Jeffrey.
On Twitter, the most difficult task I completed was expediting my student loan debt payments. Smartest sacrifice I ever made. So in the end, you decided that it was not getting out from under your student loan debt, which amounts to how much? Give us a range, if you don't mind.
Right now, I believe it is in the low six figures, just over $100,000.
Okay. Doable. It's going to take you a while, isn't it?
It's going to take me a while. But, you know, one of the people I interviewed for this book is a man called Sam Israel, who was a hedge fund manager here in New York. And he staged his suicide in June of 2008 off the Bear Mountain Bridge, which is about an hour north of the city. And the reason why he did that is because he was facing a 20-year prison sentence because he had absconded with $500 million, that's billion with a B, of investor money. So after getting to know Sam and talking about that kind of debt, you know, student loan debt, it just didn't seem like that big a deal anymore. I'm just going to keep making those minimum monthly payments until I'm dead, until I'm actually dead.
Oh, my God. For our listeners, your chapter about people who refuse to believe celebrity deaths is so weird. I mean, buy this book just to meet Pearl, who doesn't believe that Michael Jackson is actually dead. I can't believe how persistent these sightings of dead celebrities are and these communities of people who refuse to believe it are. It's weird
amazing.
World, yeah.
It's a weird world, and it's one that I found just delightful and in a lot of ways inspiring because, like you said, you know, Michael Jackson died now oh, gosh, 8 years ago, I think. Oh, my gosh, the Michael Jackson fans are going to yell at me if I got that wrong. But it's been a while. It's been a while. And there's still these very vibrant forums online where people piece together clues and tips. And they even bring in, you know, ancient Aztec calendar calculations to understand what's going on with Michael and when he's coming back. And I think that, you know, like any kind of conspiracy theory, it just throws the world into new relief where these things that most of us take as hard and fast fact are no longer. And when you kind of look at the world that way, all other bets are off. So I think it's very interesting.
This is a really fun book, Elizabeth. Thank you so much. And really
you
fun
so
to
much.
Talk to you about it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Now,
my heart is in Minneapolis.
I now realize after talking to you about why the voice of the book is so lively and so fun. So thank you.